Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
America, this is Kenny Jones coming at you again for another week. An interesting week we have. This is We Talk Production presents Black Urban America. This is Black Urban America. I'm your host, Kenny Jones, and which airs on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. Had a rough time getting to the studio this evening, but I made it on time. On Saturdays, we had Carlton Sneed with Provocative Thought. And he comes on from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturdays. And also, we had a marketing partnership program for self-employed people as well as small business owners. We talk production would like to work with your business, to expand your business, to have your business exposed to the nation as well as the world. If you're interested, 404-573-6144, if you're interested. I think it would be a great thing for you to have this partnership with We Talk Productions. Now, I want to look at some political hot topics this evening before my guest arrives to the studio. One, let's look at the let's look at the race, the Senate race in Alabama with Roy Moore. And it's a dead heat between Doug Jones, who is the Democratic Party candidate, and Roy Moore, who is the Republican Party candidate. And about 14 women came out as this man. When they were 12, 13, 14 years old, Mr. Moore, Judge Moore, yeah, he's a judge, was groping them and molesting them. As nothing being done about, in fact, the president, the current president of the United States, is supporting him. Yes, he is supporting him. He said, we need Roy Moore for the Senate vote. And he's a child molester. Child molester. I mean, like, I don't mean to laugh. I find it sad to that. Not only the Republican Party, but the nation at hand. It's so, oh, God, can I say, I want to look correct here. It's so negative. Negative. They would do anything to make America great again. Now, what does that mean, make America great again? I remember a year ago when Trump won against Hillary, and the day after, Mike Pence, who was the vice president, took a picture and on top said, make America great again. And it was all white folks. Not a single minority, black, brown, yellow, or red person in the photo. So that's their code word of make America great again. To me, to make America white again. Let's have the power. I mean, your power structure never left. You're still promoting classism. You're still promoting sexism. Now, I mean, all of these people that are, all these white men that are being accused of different allegations. And guess what? They don't care. And all you sisters that talk about the brothers in a negative manner, look at that. I know we did some wrong things in our relationships and our family structures and whatnot. I know we did. I know our hands are not clean either. But these guys are something else, you must say. And in fact, another political hot topic is that President Trump was named today as the most effective sports figure of the year, 2017. What did he affect? He didn't affect change. He didn't support the brothers in protesting injustice and police brutality. And he tried to make it about the flag and the military. This guy, how can we make it about the military? Like 60-70% of African American families have their sons or daughter in service. The flag, well, I mean, like, to me, the flag represents white supremacy anyway, police brutality. So, yes, why do you think in 1968 Lee Evans and John Carlos stood there on the it came in first or second in the 400 and stand there with the black power sign with the glove on? They paid dearly for it for about 10, 20 years, but they're both doing very well now. I think one is a professor have his PhD. I forgot what the other one does. But this is something that has been in American history since inception. Anyone that said, you're wrong for the mistreatment of our culture. Oh, they either, well, say negative things about you, plant things on you, or kill you, or put you in prison. What, we got a couple of Black Panthers from the 60s, they're still alive, and they're, I call them POWs. Because it was a war at one time. They got sold out, just like this protest got sold out. But that's okay. But tonight, I just want to see if this, Mr. Thompson, you're on air. Hello?
Hello?
Ms. Thompson?
Hello?
Yes, Ms. Thompson.
Yes.
Hi, how are you? Welcome
Hi, how are you?
To Black Earth America.
Fine, thank you.
How are you this evening?
Can't complain, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you for thank you for asking me to be on your show. Thank you.
Yes, and I am very much excited about the topic that we're going to discuss this evening, which are gangs.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a growing problem. Not just, it's a growing problem around the country. It's horrible.
Yes, before we get into that, why don't you tell our audience and our downloaders a little bit about yourself?
My name is Nene Thompson. I'm a member of the New Black Power Movement. It's a Facebook group. I'm just a positive, uplifting, empowering group of people on Facebook that come together to share information and our ideas on different things that concern the Black community. I'm a mental health counselor by profession, and I work with young Black men in the community in the area of mental health.
Okay. Well, Ms. Thompson, let me ask you something. In your assessment in working with young African-American men, what do you think is going on in reference to we have the highest high school dropout rate, 72.5% of African-American families are headed by single moms. African-American men has the lowest reading and math scores. 1.5 million African-American fathers are doing time in prison, whether it is at the state or federal level. And the college enrollment in the past 20 years had reduced among African-American men, which African-American women is like their population has grown. So tell me, your assessment, what are you hearing? What are they saying? What are the issues that are surrounding the brothers?
I mean, well, it speaks to what you were saying earlier about the culture of this country. You know, it's by design that our communities are being destabilized and our men are being disadvantaged. And they're being socialized into accepting certain stereotypes about themselves. I think in some communities, going to jail and being involved in criminal activity to a certain extent is being popularized. And then going to jail is like a rite of passage. I see that here in New York City. So they just accept it as their lot in life. I'm seeing that among some young Black men, and they're getting sucked into the system. And, you know, once and it gets sucked into the system, it's a slippery slope. You know, once you have a record, then it's hard to come out and get a high-paying job, or, you know, it just destabilizes the whole community. But it's by design, so it's...
When you say it's by
design... The system
design,
working as it was designed to work.
When you say it's by design, how is it by design?
I mean, the over surveillance of the Black community, the criminalization of young Black men, especially here in New York City, it's a money-making proposition. It's a huge, huge issue. I don't know if you read the book, The New Jim Crow, Michelle Alexander, but it's a money-making proposition.
Everybody knows about that book.
It's not the... Yeah. So
everybody
knows
about
like
that
it's,
book.
It's a business to criminalize Black men. It's a business, so... Unfortunately, I don't think some young men are aware of really the forces that are around them that are contributing to what's happening in the community. They're just taking it as their lot in life. Like a lot of the music reinforces the behaviors that lead to them being criminalized. Some of the things that are criminalized should not be criminalized, like drugs, for example. So it's quite easy for people to be sucked into the system, unfortunately, especially if they don't have an intact family. So it's like generational. Mm-hmm.
Do you think, when you say by design, do you think some of the laws and policies are developed? For example, I can remember, this might be open for your time, I can remember when Rudy Giuliani was first elected, his first term. And he immediately, I mean, as soon as the inauguration, he immediately implemented the Stop and Frisk law. That's an example.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think some of our laws and policies are developed and implemented to be difficult for the Black man to function in our society?
Without question.
And I don't
want to
use that too much of a
statement.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ms. Thomas.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. Can you repeat that, please?
I don't want to use that as an excuse, neither, because we got self-responsibility for our own behavior, too. But go ahead.
But take this. For example, say selling marijuana, right? So if you're
right.
in New York and you're selling marijuana as a young Black man, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to have a prison. You'll probably go to prison or jail or whatever for a period of time, and now you have a criminal record. But rich white men are getting rich off of selling marijuana. So it's based on your poverty, your race, or whatever. They disadvantage you. It doesn't need to be criminalized. Like they over, like you said, the stop and frisk. It was a quota system. You know, and it's not to protect the public good. It's to fill the jails. And, you know, I mean, I understand about personal responsibility and everything like that, but it's much larger than personal responsibility. You can be a respectable Black person and still be sucked into the system. You know, being a decent Black person is not protection against all of these laws and institutions and things that have been put in place to control our population. So, my people not.
Do you think that let me put it this way. We all know the deck is stacked against us. We all know that the playing field is unlevel. In fact, it's a newism called classism, and which we fall in both with classes and racism. What can we do? What can we do to prevent another generation of young Black boys falling to the prey? Because for what I am observing, I don't think it's going to stop no time soon.
I don't see it stopping anytime soon either. There's so many things going on right now. As far as Black people, I think what we can do is stop dividing ourselves along respectability politics. It's like there's a segment of black people, educated black people, Christian black people. I'm just saying in general, you know, I'm not that like other, I mean, what they consider to be ignorant or poor black men or black men with a criminal record. So basically they're left to hang by themselves to figure it out. Like if we were unified on the issue of mass incarceration instead of people referring to a certain type of black person as an N-word who's worthy of abuse and whatever happens to them and just realize that it's racist against black people in general, I think it would go a long way to solving the problem because there are a lot of black people who have become part of the system now. You know, they see that they're above other black people. So that's a huge issue. Like we're undermining our own people. There's no real unity. You can't just go by, you know, a black face in a high place is not, you know, a lot of black people are naive because they see we had a black president or whatever, but he directly did things that undermined other black people.
Yes, he did. I agree with that, Ms. Todd. Every time I say something like that, I'm looked at funny. But I just want to go back to the mental health field for a second. Dr. John Hendrick Clark said that the field of psychology is no place for the black man to pursue. What do you think about that?
In terms of a profession?
No, not in terms of a profession.
I disagree.
In terms of services, going to therapy, going to family therapy, counseling, services that the mental health,
the community mental health
clinic provides.
I mean, to me, the issue is not that we shouldn't get the services. It's more the quality of services and the people who are not culturally competent to deal with our issues. You know, because I've seen within my own work how racism plays into the system. You know, black men are overdiagnosed with schizophrenia, and based on like what they think are presenting symptoms of schizophrenia, like paranoia, psychotic behavior. But in our communities, like we know within ourselves, it's an adaption. It might be disturbing to an outsider, but we wouldn't judge these behaviors as like hypervigilance or something like that as a sign of mental illness. It would actually be a sign of mental health. So it's very difficult. It you know, that piece, they feel people don't feel like they're not understood. They're just completely unaware. I do think that there are people who suffer from actual depression is underdiagnosed and brushed over in our community. Like, it's glossed over. That's a huge issue. You know, a lot of people are self-medicating in our community instead of seeking services, but they don't have access to services. So I definitely encourage people. There's a 10-year-old little girl who committed suicide. You know, so
10 years old,
yeah. It's a huge thing. You know, the rate of suicide among young black men, young black girls, it's increasing because, I mean, it's a very stressful society. It's very difficult to you know, in our community, I mean, among some people, it's seen as a sign of weakness. You know, and it's like, just get over it. Black people don't do this. We don't do that. All right. You know, they'll go to church or they'll just, you know, try to grin and bear it.
Yeah.
It's a huge
Well, has the mental health community accepted the African-American male as an individual that is in need of services? I mean, at one time, the mental health community was kind of standoffish in working with the African American community. I mean, African American men. They had no problems working with the sisters, but the brothers, they had a little difficulties in working with.
I mean, black men are getting medication and they're being, you know, treated to a certain extent. I don't think they're respected. I think it's more a lot of punitive behaviors. It's a mess. You know, generally speaking, what I have found is that people outside of the black community or in the profession are not culturally competent. You know, so the quality of care for black men is sorely lacking. That's why I encourage other black people to go into the field. You know, and not just black people, just like black in color, people who are socially conscious and socially aware and are interested in justice and you know, quality treatment and things of that nature.
And you say black you belong to the new Black Power Movement?
The new Black Power Movement.
What do you think about what do you think about Colin Kaepernick?
I'm very pleased with Colin Kaepernick. I'm very pleased, you know, that he had the guts to stand up for what he thought was correct.
He wasn't the only one. Now.
It showed to me. It showed people's true colors. You know,
mm-hmm.
It also exposed a lot of cowardice in our own community.
Yeah, true. And did you hear about how they just got bought off? I should not say that. How they received almost, I forgot the amount.
70-something.
$100 million. Excuse me, $100 million from the owners to address injustice. Like, how can you put a dollar amount on injustice and police brutality? It reminded me, I'm going to take over the conversation with Thompson, but it reminded me of the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, after we have all these urban riots, we have America on the ropes, we could have named our own ticket, you know, and a lot of individuals got positions of authority, like mayors, congressmen, university presidents, organization got multi-million-dollar contracts with the government, and guess what? No more Black Power Movement.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that's going to be? It's a history repeat itself.
Yeah, they buy people's silence and people assimilate and they're integrated and then they're comfortable and then they're not willing to give up that position. So just go with the flow. Yeah.
So you think history going to repeat itself with the new Black Power Movement, Black Lives Matter? You know, just like these black athletes got $100 million basically to salute the flag.
We have to look at what did not work in the past. You understand? So we can't keep doing the same things over and over again and think we're going to get different results. It's like there's a formula to this, and it's very easy to attack different organizations. It's just pick off the leaders, you know, and put some plants in there to destabilize the organization, pay off a couple of members, and then it's over. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm not disrespectful or whatever. Like, I understand the underlying message behind Black Lives Matter, but there's some other things in there that are like anti-black families. You know, they've been co-opted by corporate America. So I don't really rock with them. You know, they've become a thing now. They've become like a business.
Yeah.
So
well, do you think
if you compromise one or two of the members, it's over.
But you know that movements and organization need finances in order to address the social ills in our communities. And now, like, how can we not accept corporate money but try to support our own selves so we could address our own ills without receiving, I guess, the traditional corporate finances? How can we do that?
I don't think it's that hard, really. I mean, maybe I'm naive. I don't know. You understand what I'm saying? Like, the old structure did not work of having an organization and the organization dictated to people what they should do and listen to this talking head and whatever. So as far as needing corporate sponsorship or money, are you talking about nonprofits set up to do particular things in the community?
Both.
I'm not understanding.
Well, you know, not only nonprofit, you know, monies come from everywhere, whether it be from government assistance to grants to, like you said, corporate sponsorship and what have you. Do you think in today's society we need to accept that assistance versus have our own black businesses and community support each other in addressing these social ills.
That's the only way it's going to work. It's unrealistic. It was always unrealistic to think that white people had our best interests at heart. And no matter how they throw money at things, once their hand is in it, if they donate money, they get to kind of set the agenda. And they can inject their crap into the agenda. So if people really want to come together and make some positive changes, like, we have to do it on our own. We have to do it ourselves without being compromised by donations from, like, look at the Nation of Islam, how they've been compromised. Because Farrakhan made a deal with the Dianetics, a Scientologist, getting money off of them.
Was that
so you compromise your whole organization. Yes, too, they got a Dianetics Scientology thing in Harlem, like, in Black Harlem. Like, what are we doing here? People can say that they, I don't want to but bash him. I'm just using that as one example. But you see it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Ms. like.
Thompson, I don't mean to disagree with you, Ms. Thompson. Ms. Thompson, Harlem's not black no more.
To a certain extent, it is.
Yeah, where at?
But they're there. Our days are numbered. Our days are numbered in Harlem. Sure.
I know they took Bed-Stuy.
I see it.
I know they took Bed-Stuy. I worked at Bed-Stuy for 20 years. They took Bed-Stuy.
They're going to take Harlem. And here's the thing. And here's the thing that people. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I didn't say anything.
No, you're correct. When they decide that they're gentrifying and they want a particular area, slowly over time, slowly but surely, they take over the area and they push the other people out. In Harlem, I think black people's hackles should be raised. And rather than trying to integrate, socialize, and do all of that stuff with these people, you have to be aware of what they're doing and what levels they're willing to take it. Speaking back to your issue about young men and the gang issue and how it's bigger than what it seems on the surface, how it's a systemic issue that we need to all be wary of, even the respectable, good Negroes, they were able to use surveillance and technology, right, to target over 100 boys in one particular complex, and they arrested over 120 young men in one location. So I don't think it's a coincidence that it's an area where they're gentrifying, that they removed 120 men without any resistance from the community. Because they use their Facebook postings and their Instagram and the things they said on social media, and they tie them all together into this elaborate plot that really doesn't even make sense, and use that as grounds to arrest them. So,
how can our communities, because almost every African American community across the United States have an issue with gangs. First of all, let me ask you this. Why would somebody join a gang knowing that this group is violent? Why would somebody join
Brotherhood, protection? A lot of these gangs started as social groups in the community to actually empower and protect the community and help the community, and they just kind of got warped because of the values or whatever, and they just went out into left field. So if you're a young man who lives in this area and you're not in a gang, you're going to feel vulnerable. You might be attacked. So, I mean,
right.
That's motivation enough to join. There's, you know, solidarity, there's protection, there's fun, there's money to be made, it's attractive to some girls, it's a way to feel powerful in your environment. It's a whole host of things that in their minds are positive. You know, unfortunately,
right.
They get involved in all kind of illicit activity. It's just like a nightmare. If you really sit and watch some of the behaviors and things that are unfolding, it's horrific. But they're about to pull the plug on all of that.
So how can we change that thinking process among us? I mean, well, let me put it this way. I'm really going to make a comment instead of a question and see how you feel about it. You know, the gangs are here. Okay. They've been here for like 40, 50 years, you know, in some communities. And like you said, some of them started out. We're going to protect our community from outsiders. So our grandma won't get, our pocketbook won't get snatched, or our cousin won't get beat up. The gangs are here. How do you think we could change their thinking process from negative behavior to positive behavior? Does it take seminars, workshops, people going to them and speaking to them? I mean, how? I mean, they're here and they glorify in music, movies,
and conversation.
So, for me, I'm one that's about not getting rid of the gangs because they're here. I'm about changing the attitude and behavior.
Absolutely.
Like, they're already entrepreneurs negatively.
Absolutely.
They already have skills. They can organize. They got leadership. But how can
Absolutely.
We, you know, what do you think about that, Ms. Thompson?
I mean, I agree with you 1,000%. It's exactly that. Like, we're not going to get rid of them, but if we can engage them, and they get so much from engaging with older men. I'm like a student of what's unfolding in Chicago, the horrors of what's unfolding in Chicago, and now it's infecting the whole gang culture, and they like have certain groups that were never in New York now are in New York because they're enamored of these boys in Chicago because of the music and all that stuff, social media. But to speak to your point, like older, they were saying one of the reasons why things are so out of control in Chicago is because there are no more big homies or older dudes in the neighborhood that some of these young men look up to. So there's no structure in some of these places. There's no, you know, guidance, or they're just every man for himself. There's no organization. There's no higher thought process. It's just get whatever you can get, regardless of whatever. And it's horrendous. So like people who are concerned and not afraid to engage with these young men, they need to be mentors. They need to have workshops. They need to reach out to them and try to engage them in some kind of positive activity. Like we have them on the group. And it's not to encourage the behavior because I don't encourage negativity. I don't encourage violence in our community. But, you know, just to introduce them to certain things they might not have in their environment, more positive pro-black behaviors. And hopefully some of them will come around. It's like you got to plant the seed.
Right.
I don't think it's a hopeless case. I really don't.
Me neither. I don't think it's hopeless, but a lot of brothers that's like 35 and older think it's hopeless. In fact, I know some individuals myself that really don't want to be around young black men. And I find that appalling. I find that really, I cringe when I hear that. And the first thing that come out older black man's mouth. The first thing to come out, they don't listen. They too violent. Oh, they're upside the head. You know, I don't want to talk to them, whatever they call them. But I said, these are your sons, your nephews. You know?
Absolutely.
I mean, where would I be? If I look at myself, where would I be without a couple older brothers at the time that took an interest in spending a half hour a week with me or coaching me, because I was heavy into sports at one time in my youth. You know, like, I mean, there are brothers out there doing it, but like, if you're hard to reach or you are at risk and everything, they don't want to be bothered. I mean, like, how can we change our generation, my generation mind, and say, look, even though you may not live in the community no more, maybe you could go back once or twice a week and do something She's a body construction.
It's sad to me.
Teach a young kid how to read. Teach a young kid how to throw. I mean, you got half. I bet you. I'll bet you $10 million. Half of gang members used to be athletes when they were younger. I'm saying that off the top of my head without reading any documents.
You can engage these men. They're not, like you said, they're not. We have to work with the positive things that we have. A lot of these are intelligent young men. They're motivated young men. They're talented young men. They're athletic. They're intelligent. They have all this other stuff going for them, but they've been socialized into this culture that is just demonic, really. It's horrendous. And it's like, I think black people, some black people who are older or they are doing a little bit better, they feel if they other this group of black people, that it somehow protects them. Like Chris Rock said something that I think was so disgusting. It's despicable. He said there's a difference between black people and N-words, right? So if you in your mind, like you don't live in the hood anymore, if you think of yourself as a respectable black person and these other kids are N-words, then they're like socially dead to you. So whatever happens to them, it just happens. But they don't get it. Like we might see the difference between ourselves, but the broader society really doesn't see the difference between one black person to the next, regardless of whatever little pats on the head that you feel that you're getting because you're integrated and assimilated. It's like, why would you just allow the whole large percentage of your race to be demonized and just chewed up by the system? I just don't get it.
This time,
even Cornel West said the same thing.
I know. And matter of fact, during the Obama era, there were a lot of brothers and sisters saying, oh, I'm not like those black people over there. Huh?
It's disgusting.
I mean, you got family members that live in that neighborhood. You know? That's why I said this on the show, the week after Donald Trump was elected. So listen to me now. Listen to me before you say anything. I was glad for Donald Trump to win the presidency because hopefully when as a people, see, individually, we've been making it. We've been making progress. But collectively, we have not. With this man over office, hopefully it's a hammer on top of our head and say, uh-oh, we have to do something. We have to come together. And the only time we black folks come together is in a crisis. And this is an example of a crisis. In fact, he was talking to a law enforcement convention about 6 months ago, and he called us thugs. And somebody told me,
but
you know,
Obama did the same thing.
Oh, he did. But I don't think he meant thugs like Donald Trump meant thugs, because thugs, like this young brother said on a documentary, thugs is a new N-word. It's the
new N-word. I mean, it's the old N-word. It's just, but I hear what you're saying, and I agree. But there are some black people who are so clueless and are so assimilated that they'll feel like, look at Carson, look at the head of HUD and the secretary of HUD, I think, for Jersey and New York. They're black people in race, but their minds are completely gone. Like, some people think they're so far above it that nothing that happens to the average black man and black woman on the street will have any effect on them whatsoever. So, you would think that it would wake people up, but some people still don't get it. But Obama, he's the Manchurian candidate because he normalized the notion that black men were the problem and that somehow it was us that needed fixing, like we're a problem that needs to be solved. He even went to Morehouse, and the way he spoke to them was so discouraging. Like, why would you... In praising them and everything, he made some insulting comments. He did it to the Congressional Black Caucus. He did it at the 50th March on Washington. He did it on Jay Leno in reference to Trayvon Martin. You know, regardless of the other little things that he said, he did frame the conversation in the context of Trayvon as the problem. He didn't address, you know, white male gun violence. So, yeah, that's the culture of this country to scapegoat black people.
But you see, Ms. Thompson, you know, white men or the white culture or the dominant culture, they're going to do what they're going to do. And I feel, now, I really don't really give my personal opinions on different topics, but I feel, as a black man, that being a volunteer football coach, junior high school, that work in different urban areas in Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and Jersey, I feel that it is our fault. It is. I'm sorry. Because for what
What's
I read,
fault?
What's our fault? The conditions that we're in. I mean, we turn, there are a number of black men around this country that turn the blind eye. You know, we didn't keep our families intact. We didn't raise our families. You know, I know a lot of it's economic. I know it. But if you don't learn from your history, you're going to repeat it. And a lot of us that were able to do something didn't do it. Did look back, did help others, didn't be mentors, yes, there are hundreds, thousands of black men are doing things in the communities around this country that help other young black men. But as a collective, black men failed the race for the past 35 years. We got into other behaviors, other incentives, other goals that they really they have nothing to do with the collective.
Integration and assimilation.
Yeah, okay.
Integration, assimilation, lack of knowledge of self, all of these things are cultural values. I mean, what was our identity? We're just trying to conform to the standards here, which is in itself a sickness for African mind to try to wrap their mind and emulate these people's behavior. So, like you said, instead of building like a solid community, a lot of people were off on their own thing, doing their own thing. And what they considered success, you know, they didn't look back. They didn't have concern with other people in the community. That even happened within families. You know, it's a whole host of issues. We're not helpless, but a lot of people are misguided. That's the only way I can.
Yeah.
A lot of black people are misguided because Amos Wilson said it. In order for this system to continue, it requires black people really to be out of their minds. Because we call it and we go along with stuff that really doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, we have been.
You know, so I mean, yeah.
Well, with a couple minutes left, would you like to say anything with a couple minutes left, Ms. Thompson? I really enjoy our conversation. You like to conclude?
No, I just appreciate you having me on the show. Nice talking to you.
Well, you know, Ms. Thompson, I hope you'll come back. This has been a stimulating conversation, you know, and I hope you'll come back in the next few months and we could continue to, because the struggle continues. And the thing
Absolutely.
That I like is to talk to more young black folks about issues that what needs to be done, and not only talk about it. Yes, we need to have a conversation about it, but like John Henry Clark said, we have to start implementation and making a plan. So
Absolutely.
I thank you. Yeah, I thank you for coming on the show. And next time, you could bring the brother that was supposed to appear tonight.
Yeah, Brother Anwar, he's excellent. I got him at short notice, but he didn't respond back in time. But next time, Brother Anwar will be on. He's excellent.
Okay. Matter of fact, I'll message you after the the beginning of the year. We can make another day, okay? I really enjoy your discussion.
Oh, sure. That's fine.
Okay.
I enjoy your call. Thank you so much.
All right. And,
all right. Take care.
And keep on helping my young brothers, because we need it. I just wish you was a brother helping them, but keep on helping. Keep on helping. Yo, because we got enough female leaders. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to go there. We have enough black women doing their thing.
We're moms. We're mothers at the end of the day, many of us. So.
Okay. Good night, Ms. Thompson.
All right. Good night.
There you have it. Very intelligent young lady. Trying to do something for young brothers. But like I say at the end, brothers got to start taking responsibility for this. I'm tired of hearing sisters on the front line. These sisters are fighting for us, being entrepreneurs, being therapists, being teachers. A black woman mentor to a young brother, we got to take over that. We do. And I'm tired of it. We brothers got to say it every week. Brothers got to step up. Yes, there are brothers doing their thing to help other young brothers, but it's not enough. All you got to do is go to your state penitentiary, and you'll see. Well, that's another week. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night, Black Urban America.